Episode 23 of the Night of Living Dreads podcast. This week, we discuss the curse on the in coincidence with the spooky hand of the Prince of Darkness, as well as all the wrong turn movies get graded by the Insane Asylum, as well as this week's SMF, Turn It Up. I am Otis B. Dreads. Unfortunately, Malice could not be with us this evening. Feeling a little under the weather. I guess there's some kind of a flu bug or something going on, so we wish him a speedy recovery. And by we, I mean we have Mrs. Dreads here, Jody B. Dreads. Jody is sitting in for Malice, and I tell you what, we got some, got a good SMF. This came straight from Jody herself, if that tells you what kind of a woman she is. Good one, and we're also going to talk a little bit about the supposed curse that was apparently going on during the filming and making of The Omen, which came out in 1976. That one scared the hell out of me. I don't know about you guys, but and then along with that, we're going to talk a little bit about the Wrong Turn movie series, up to six as we speak. And but before we get into all that, of course, we got to give out a little bit of love. Jody, you want to know, you do know a place where fun-loving horror freaks and fanatics can go to? You know where that might be?
Are you talking about Gorehounds?
Gorehounds from hell. Gorehounds from hell. Gorehounds of horror. I got the Three from Hell movie in my head. No, Gorehounds of Horror over there on Facebook. And good group, I'm telling you. Closed group, so you're going to have to be put through some sort of blood sacrifice out in the woods. And it will involve small farm animals. So if that's your kind of thing, Gorehounds of Horror is your kind of Facebook page. You can also check out Night of the Living Dreads. We're over there as well. And there's a another little group out there, another horror-loving group that... we got a little share for share thing going on over there at Gorehounds. That would be After Dark over there. If you're into the, you know, doing the, what do they call it? The watch parties. If you're into that, and I haven't been a part of any, I've actually jumped in just to see the quality of the video and how that works. And it didn't seem that bad, but I just don't have... really, that kind of time, you know, I'd rather sit, if I'm going to watch a movie, I'd rather sit, you know, with some friends and watch them that way versus, you know, on Facebook. But if that is your only means, then again, I'm not shitting on that. But they do a lot over there, and it seems to be doing quite well. So After Dark over there as well. And again, nightlivingdreads.com, and Dreads is with no A. So... We just got that party kicked off quite well there, Charity. No, we got some interesting things to talk about. And you better watch that little beast over there. Got the little family dog over here, and boy, if you get anywhere near her, she will pretty much take your fucking hand off. It doesn't even mean to.
Yes, she does.
I think sometimes she may. I guess without further ado, it's time for this week's SMF.
Oh, you sick motherfucker!
This week's SMF is Andre Chikatilo. He's a Russian, so I don't know if I'm really pronouncing that last name right, but he is this week's sick motherfucker. You're soon going to learn at least a little bit, because this guy, Jody, he confessed up to 56 murders. I think he was only actually legitimately convicted on 52.
Yeah.
So, but still, it takes a little bit of time, and this was only through about a, 12-year or so period. This guy was a little bit out of control. You want to tell us a little bit about what do we know about this guy? I mean, what was his background like? That because we did some research earlier, and all that I got out of it was that this was during the famine under Stalin. So there was a lot of starvation going on. Very, very poor times. But he was still, kind of a close-knit family kid.
Yeah.
All in all. That's kind of the impression that I got.
With his family, he got made fun of and stuff a lot in school.
Yeah, outside the family,
yeah. Because of how skinny he was and how little he was.
Right. And, he had, I guess, because they were so poor, had a lot of homemade clothes.
Yeah,
because his mom would stitch up, some clothes. So he was made fun of there. But on the home front, it seemed like, he was fairly loved. Hard times, I guess, can bring a family together.
Yeah, and his mom told him that his older brother was abducted by cannibals and ate.
And he was fairly young, actually.
Yeah, it scarred him.
Like 5, 6 years old?
He was
old?
Four or five.
Yeah. So, that's something that kind of can stick in a little kid's craw, and how sick was she? Maybe we should be talking about that. Well, why would you do that, though?
It may have happened. They just couldn't confirm whether it did or did not happen.
Because, there was a lot of speculation that there was no real hardcore evidence to show that was actually true.
Right.
Now, whether or not his mom did say that could have been true.
Oh, yeah.
But there was still no proof that happened. Maybe right. His mom was just as fucking crazy as he was. Who knows?
Maybe she cut him up and ate him.
Maybe that's what they had last week. So, other than that, the hardships of being poor, the starvation all around. I mean, he saw a lot. And then being told that by his mom, it kind of put it in his head that people were actually, doing this and eating each other. He gets into, school, as we briefly noted that he was made fun of.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of a geeky kid, but did well in school.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a flunky. I think he had a pretty high IQ, if I'm not mistaken. And
he did good in school, then, grade-wise.
Grade-wise, yeah. But he didn't fit in, picked on quite a bit. The object of bullying, I guess, as we would say now. So, what until a little bit later? When was his first real? Because I think he was a teenager when he really busted into the whole crime scene. What was it? A murder? Was it what
Not
kind
really.
Of crime?
He went clear up through school, it was when he hit puberty that he realized he was impotent.
There you go, yeah.
And he had relations with a couple women, and they kind of blew him off because he couldn't get his junk hard. So then they spread it around. So then he hated being there.
He
so
got made fun of because
of that.
That's when he went to college,
though. Right. And stuff. And, yeah. But then it was like he had already graduated college when he found out his first killing.
Yeah, it was. It was soon out of college. I think he was about 19, 20 years old? Maybe about 20 or so?
I think he might have been. He was married by then.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, and you know, the impotence thing, that really was kind of the spark in this rage that he carried on through life. He felt that he was not a man, that he was less than, you know, it's just something, you know, he had the old ED.
Yeah, and that was... I don't even know where I was going with that.
I don't either. But, yeah, so, you know, this whole ED thing, it, of course, made relationships extremely difficult. The, you know, relationships were always kind of unsteady with him because of that. He couldn't enjoy the fruitful nature of a relationship, you know, and the whole experience, you know, the having sex and all that. You couldn't get it all. He was missing something because of that.
Because remember, he was a teacher before he even had his first killing.
He was, yes.
That's when he got accused of the child molestation and fondling himself in class.
This guy was a sick motherfucker.
And instead of them firing, well, they fired him instead of making it public.
Yeah.
And then he taught at a vocational school, got accused of the same stuff, so he left, and then he worked for a factory.
Right. Kind of got out of that, thought that that would kind of help, you know, cure or curve his, you know, desires or whatnot. Because as he was a teacher, he was getting, he found himself becoming aroused by the students, especially the girls. And, you know, he was, I guess, accused of maybe, you know, rubbing up and getting a little too close to some students, girls, and made them feel uncomfortable. So, you know, he was getting these urges. He knew he couldn't do anything about it because, you know, he had the old, you know, limp willy. So he couldn't do nothing about it. And this absolutely, you know... Like I said, it infuriated him. It kept that rage going, you know, pretty much his entire life. And I think was kind of the backbone and the incendiary of all of these, you know, a lot of these ghastly murders. We're only going to discuss a few in the interest of time. But again, there was, you know, he said 56. He was convicted of 52. I seen you looking over there at your notes. Mm-hmm. What do you got to say?
No, I was just starting with the, because you remember in 78, he bought a house.
That's right, yes.
A dilapidated house and lured that girl, Alexandra, what was her name? Alexandra Bolganovsky. He lured her there and killed her. Remember he lured her, no, sorry, I am
that
wrong.
That wasn't the bubblegum one.
No, it was no. Lena.
Yeah, because the bubblegum one was a little older.
Right. It was Lena that he did that to. And he lured there with bubblegum. Because they said back in that time, bubblegum wasn't a big thing.
Yeah, little kids. Yeah, that was kind of a big thing for, you know, a little kid to get bubblegum, you know, because of how poor everyone was.
And that's the one where they found the trail of blood that was from his house to her body.
Right.
And they still never found him suspect because... of his reputation in the community, and
he was a big you know, he'd been involved in the Communist Party, and the youth movement, the Communist Youth Movement. I think when he was a kid, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then so they arrested the neighbor who had been charged of crimes. He had been charged at murder at one time and stuff. So they arrested him and charged him with it and executed him.
Right, and execute him for these crimes that, you know, forgot his name. There it is, Andre. It's right in front of me. That Andre committed. And again, because Andre had no criminal background.
Right.
He was a family man. He had kids. He had a wife. He was loved by his community. You know, he supported the Communist Party and blah, blah, blah. No, this guy could never do it. No. Little did they know.
Yeah, and then in September, that's when he did the Larissa. She's the one who he didn't have. There was something he didn't have. Because he stabbed her, and then he's when he bit her nipple off.
Oh, yes, yes. And they knew that, you know, he stabbed her. I think they said up to like 30 sometimes. Was that her? But I think they said on average, his stab victims, the victims that were stabbed, on average were stabbed like 25 to 30 times each victim.
Mm-hmm.
So it was way overkill.
Like the head, the neck, and the torso.
Yes, a lot in the face, a lot in the head, a lot in the torso, a lot in the private areas. We're going to get into one there. But yes, and this particular victim, was it Larissa?
Larissa.
She...
Chachenko.
She... would you call me? she was missing a nipple.
Yeah.
And they looked, because, yes, there were stab wounds, but they were able to, you know, at least come to the conclusion that this nipple was not cut off with a knife. There was not that kind of marking on it. This nipple was removed by someone biting on it and ripping it off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what good old Andre did. Bit the, I think it was the left nipple off, and not that that would really matter, left or right at that point, but yeah, so, and I think that's when they said that, you know, that the crimes started getting a lot more brutal,
right,
as it went on.
Yeah, because that's when the police finally started to be able to close in on the fact that it was him.
Right.
I remember they had taken him to jail, but then they couldn't hold him because they say that he had a disorder that caused his blood to, if it was tested through semen or something, that it would test a different
blood type
than right. It would what his actual blood type is.
Right.
So I guess his semen was testing AB positive, and he was actually A positive blood type. So they let him go on that. Plus they said that the incompetency of the police department and losing mm-hmm. stuff. And
They lost his blood sample, his semen sample, I believe, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in a couple of the documentaries we watched, it was almost like they were like, they were presenting that part of the documentary as if, well, this was back in the, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, you know, whenever, and, well, their, you know, technology wasn't as advanced as it is now. No, we're talking about human error here. We're not yeah. talking about, oh, well, they didn't have the same kind of computers then, so, you know, Bob, you know, lost the, you know, the fucking samples over there in the lab.
Right. Well, when they stopped him at the train station, that's when they found the briefcase on him.
Right. And what was in that briefcase?
He had one, Vaseline, rope, and knives. Yeah. They still let him go.
Vaseline, rope, and knives. And the reason that they stopped him, if I remember correctly, is that at this point they did have some detectives staked out, you know, around the area.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of detectives spotted a guy who kept approaching these younger females.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them prostitutes, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not a crime to approach women. But he did kind of fit, you know, kind of the profile. They did have a some kind of psychiatrist mm-hmm. who did a psychological profile on this guy, which they said eerily was like almost dead on
mm-hmm.
Once they finally caught up to this guy. But anyway, what got him, you know, stopped at this particular point and his bag searched was the fact that they saw him fondling this prostitute in a back alley or off on a side street.
Yep.
And that gave the cops, okay, now we can stop it because this is public indecency and blah, blah, blah. And they search and they find Vaseline, rope, and knives.
Mm-hmm. And that's when he got arrested on November 20th, 1990. And they had the one doctor come in, Bolvinsky or something, come in mm-hmm. and got him talking.
Right.
He started confessing to... That's when he... They said they got him to confess to the murders, but never got him to confess to actually eating the bodies.
Eating anything. So he wasn't really so much labeled a cannibal.
Right.
But the... I think what makes him really so horrible, first of all, he had a long career. 12 years is pretty long to go undetected and kill 50 plus people. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were kids.
Yeah.
I mean, mutilated, some of them beyond all recognition. I mean, it just really, and we've seen some pictures of some of these young kids, young boys. Some of the, you know, the eyes were gouged out of their head because there was a thought, a belief that if, you know, if somebody is barreling down on you and killing you, that moment of death, whatever you're looking at is like somehow etched on your eyes or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. It was some kind of, I guess, belief in Russia amongst them people in that time. I don't know. It was the first time I'd ever heard of it. But at any rate, apparently, Andre believed this too,
mm-hmm.
because he actually literally cut the eyes out. That there was a little bit of dismemberment and disembowelment going on, taking the uterus. Now, he was asked, I believe, at one point, if, you know, he ever ate the uterus or something of that nature. Is that mm-hmm. what it was?
Mm-hmm.
And what was his response, Jody?
He said no. He said he liked to nibble on it. He said it because it was pink and springy.
Pink and springy. Now, I don't know about you people, because I think that's the perfect way to leave this sick motherfucker. I don't know about you people, but I've never heard of a uterus being described as pink and springy. But before we wrap this up, we have to let everyone know how this sick motherfucker met his demise. When was his court date? He was sentenced, he was arrested, and that kind of, you know, went on from there in November 20th, mm-hmm. What was that, 1990?
1990. He was convicted on October 15th, 1992, and then he was executed on February 15th, 1994.
Now, their executions was not like ours. Mm-hmm. They, in Russia... when you were sentenced to die, you were given a date. Mm-hmm. And on that date, you would walk down. They would take you to this isolated room. And, you would be shot behind the right ear. Execution style. Boom. Done. I don't believe with methods like that, that they had a long wait on death row. And it cost, you know, the... taxpayers or whatever of Russia, you know, to have to pay for all these death row inmates. No, it was pretty to the point.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how long after his sentencing.
2 years.
It was 2 years. So, you know, 2 years, well, boom.
Yeah. Actually, a little less than 2 years.
A little less than 2 years after he was convicted that he was executed.
Yeah, because he was convicted on October 15th, 1992. And then on February 15th of 94, he was executed.
Okay.
It was about a year and a half.
Yeah, about a year and a half or so. So they don't waste much time, but they're also, you know, not using... they're just right to the point, pretty much. They're not fucking around. So, all right, there you go. Andre Chikatilo, this week's SMF. He's out of Russia. Check him out. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, though, there's, you know, a lot of, there's been a lot of talk about weird things happening on the sets of, you know, certain horror movies, especially those that, you know, surround maybe paranormal, you know, type storylines. Of course, the devil. Which happens to be one of the movies that we're going to talk about when we get back from the break. So you'll obviously recognize the music during the break. But The Omen has had a lot of strange stories that people will question. Okay, is this coincidence or is this some, you know, work of dark forces from below? We're going to talk about a few instances that happened while the movie The Omen was being filmed. And then after that, we're going to discuss a little bit some of these wrong turns. And Jody and myself are going to give a grade for each of the six wrong turns. So we've done a little binge watching here the past couple of days. So, all right, stay tuned. Enjoy this lovely break music. I am Otis B. Dreads with Jody B. Dreads sitting in for Malice. Get well, brother. We'll see you on the other side. This is Night of the Living Dreads. Night of the Living Dreads podcast. I'm Otis B. Dreads. We have Jody B. Dreads sitting in for Malice. Now we're going to get... How'd you like that song?
That's creepy.
It is. Well, it's obviously, you know, most people that... what would even give a thought about listening to this podcast or any of the ones over there at the best damn horror group on Facebook, that being Gorehounds of Horror, would probably know what that music came from, mm-hmm. where that music came from. Yes, of course, that came from The Omen. Great flick, which we're going to talk a little bit about, but not so much the movie, but some of the strange happenings that surrounded the making of that movie. But going back to that song, that shit scared me to death. All, you know, just, I don't know what it was, you know, but it just seems so damn creepy to me. It still does. It still makes me want to look over my shoulder and, you know, it's a very creepy song. Anyway, so we're going to talk about this supposed curse that was said to be on this movie, The Omen, because it was about the son of the Antichrist, or the birth of, you know, this Antichrist baby. And so, of course, it received a lot of flack, okay, from a lot of religious groups, and it was just, it wasn't received very well in that aspect. But was it really, I mean, before we even get into this, because you know, at least, you know, before we get into it, because we've obviously looked into this and talked a little bit about it. My big question here with this talk is coincidence, or are these the works of evil dark forces? Satan didn't want this movie to be made, so he started killing off people and causing bad shit. I mean, just right off the rip, we'll just get yours and then we'll go into it. What do you think?
I don't know, because there's some really strange things that happen.
There is, but I'm probably leaning more towards coincidence on a lot of these things that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, but that's a lot of coincidence.
That there is, and it seems like I even mentioned, you know, you get so many coincidences, you start questioning. All right, is there something else at play here? Because it just, there's just way too many coincidences to not look a little deeper into, you know, why these things are happening.
Right.
So we'll let the listeners be the, you know, judge, here as well. So The Omen was, released here in the States, June 25th, 1976. Now it was released in the UK a little bit earlier date. They thought it would be, it was kind of a last minute thing. They thought it would be kind of cool, I guess, to take and release this in the UK on June 6th, 1976, the sixth month, the sixth day, 1976, 666, is how they saw that. Well, they thought it was kind of brilliant, and I guess from a marketing standpoint, maybe it was. So it was released then. Before the movie even started its major productions, I think they were just 3 weeks out or so. Of course, Gregory Peck, who plays Damien's father in the movie, not Beelzebub, but, you know, his earthly father, he in his real life, 3 weeks before, you know, he was supposed to fly over to London and start filming and start going through the, you know, get the production started. His son, unfortunately, blows his head off, commits suicide. Well, Gregory Peck, kind of not having a lot of big, you know, movies and things going on at that time, a very committed actor, you know, he's sticking through it, he's white-knuckling it, he's going to continue on. And that, I believe, happened June of 75. So they were just, you know, getting ready to start the, you know, all the filming and whatnot. In September of 75 is when he flies over to London from L.A. Now, his plane was hit by lightning. Now, I looked into a little bit of this. Like, okay, you know, you got this big plane up there. You're up there where some weather shit's happening. I mean, are the odds really that great or not so great that you're going to get hit by lightning if you're in a plane? And actually, it's not a very uncommon thing. Given the fact that what planes are made of, they happen to be very conductive to electricity. And if you're flying through some sort of, weather pattern, you fly through clouds, which are throwing, lightning and whatnot back and forth, it could result in that. Pilots have said most of the time, all you're going to get really is, some electrical malfunctions for a little bit and then things may come back on or blah, blah, blah. So it's not really that uncommon, but it started to freak, those working on the Omen out a little bit, because first we have Peck's son committing suicide. Then we have, his plane as he flies over there just months after his son, dies. He's flying over to London. His plane's hit by lightning. Now, not soon or not long after that, one of the producers, it was an executive producer, I believe, Mace Neufeld, his plane is also hit by lightning flying from L.A. to London. So that kind of raised, I guess, a few eyebrows. It seemed a little strange, but I don't think anyone was thinking, the devil's after us, Beelzebub is trying to stop us from making this movie, which a lot of people from the beginning were saying. Now, Richard Donner, who was the director, there was a scene that they had to shoot. It was more or less just an aerial scene. Just shooting over top of London, getting just, a big landscape type view from a plane. Well, being on a tight budget, they decide, the guy who they were renting the plane from, it was like, okay, look, this came up. We'll give you a discount if you, let these people use your plane. It was some higher up, Chinese businessman or something. They really need the plane. We'll give you a discount on this plane. You're just going to have to wait a little bit longer. Okay, fine. They were into saving money. Again, tight budget to make this movie. So what happens? Damn plane, as it's going, a flock of black birds fly directly into the engine, causes obvious malfunctions, and the plane crashes at the end of the runway. Now, before it crashes, it takes out a Volkswagen. A total of 6 people were killed. Again, kind of a, at this point, maybe some of them are thinking, we just escaped, escaped death. I mean, that could have been us on there, So a lot of strange, things were happening. And also with that, there was some safety equipment, I guess they had, that if a flock of birds were getting close to the plane or whatnot, there were, some sensors or some buzzers would go off. It was like a, flock of birds sensor or whatnot type deal, would go off. They were mysteriously not working.
Right.
So, a little bit strange there. While in London at that time of the filming, meaning, the mid to late 70s, there was, the IRA terrorist groups, and there was a lot of bombings going on in London, a lot of political unrest. And at one of the hotels, I believe it was a Hilton, 28-story hotel. And I'm just rambling off incidences, that happened during the filming. And then we'll go back and we'll kind of, which ones do you think is either, just coincidence bullshit, or, oh, the devil had his hand in that one. But I guess the story goes, after they checked out of this hotel, there was another bombing, supposedly by the IRA. Just as, you know, the crews left, and a lot of times where these bombings, because there was, you know, another one that I'm a mention here. Gregory Peck, of course, dealing with the loss of his son and the hustle and bustle of making these films and blah, blah, blah. He was still one to try and keep morale up and keep everybody happy. So he invites everyone to his, you know, his favorite restaurant, and they were going to have some seafood. Well, and of course, again, it was, you know, producers, directors, a lot of the big wigs and a lot of the big actors and whatnot. As they are getting there, before they get there, another bomb goes off at that restaurant. So again, with the hotel, then with this restaurant, it's like, these big wigs, these ones that are needed to make this film, if something happens to them, this film probably doesn't get made. Twice have escaped what seemed to be imminent death. To me, it sounds like coincidence. It is very strange how, you know, these things are happening. Now, this movie, when it came out, made $100 million in the first 6 months in 1976. People are literally crying in the theater, as well as they would with The Exorcist. It was almost like the same kind of reaction. People were running out, throwing up because of The Exorcist. You know, people were like, seemed like they were just traumatized by you know, The Omen and this, and, you know. But here's the funny thing. It also helped Bible sales. Because Bible sales went through the roof. People were, you know, looking, you know, going in the book of Revelations. They want to see, is this really happening? Is the devil coming? And blah, blah, blah. And the last one I'm going to bring up before we start getting into, you know, the wrong turns. But I also want to get, whether it's coincidence or the Prince of Darkness. But the last one, this is the most intriguing one. This is very strange. John Richardson, who is, I think, the lead designer on, y'all remember The Omen, the famous beheading scene where the plane of glass takes the guy's head off. He designed that particular scene. And it was about a year or so later. He was working on another movie. I believe it's in Amsterdam. I don't have it written down, but he was in Amsterdam. No, I'm sorry, Holland. I do have it written down. He was in Holland, and he was with one of his assistants, Liz Moore. And they were driving, I think, to a set or a location. And there's confusion on how it happened and what exactly happened. The end result was there was a head-on collision. They said that this collision apparently was so bad that the wheel from John's car, the front wheel of John's car, it hit so hard it came up through the car and split Liz Moore in half. Now, this is this guy, I mean, he lived, obviously, because he was telling this story and said that the one of the scariest things that he saw wasn't, you know, Liz. Of course, that was horrifying, I'm sure, but it was an old mile marker, and it was 666. 6. One of the first things he saw was 666. Then once, you know, he got to the hospital, he later on found out soon after this crash that that road was the main road leading into a town called Omen. Omen spelled with 2 M's. That was kind of strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of weird. I can probably throw a big fat coincidence on most of these. That one, on the other hand, I'm not so sure of. What's your thoughts on that last one?
That last one, yeah.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking creepy to me. It just seems like, okay, a coincidence going to a town, but then, you know, you got this old mile marker where it happened being 6, and there's 3 6's, of course, separated by a comma. I don't know if that's technically Satan's, you know, number of the beast, because it has a comma in it. I don't know. But first 3 numbers he sees, 666, main road on a town to Omen. Can't make that shit up. Can't make it up. All right. So, but do you think most of those were probably coincidence, or were there any other ones that you're not really sure was a coincidence or was just too much of a coincidence for you to believe it is one?
Mm. I'm going through them in my head.
Shouldn't have a lot of room.
Shut up. I don't know. I think his son. I don't think there's any.
Yeah, I don't think anything with his son. The lightning hitting the planes, I think, again, is coincidence.
Well, yeah, because even the guy that was talking when we watched.
Right.
He said that it's common.
It is common. It you know, and 9 times out of 10, it causes no room for alarm or anything. You know, planes aren't falling out of the sky because they're getting hit by lightning every day.
Right.
But it is, you know, one of those freak things that can happen. So I think that was completely just coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones, let's see, the bombing at the hotel. That's a little strange. Maybe mm-hmm. that's more luck.
Oh, twice though.
Well. Yeah, well, 2 bombings, yeah. The first right. one, they were leaving the hotel. The crews had already been gone. And
an hour before they were supposed to be in that restaurant.
As a matter of fact, the one was said that he was on, or he was sitting there talking to his wife. They were walking out of the hotel and just heard this loud rumbling. And his wife said something about, I don't know, they had earthquakes here, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, that didn't sound like an earthquake. That sounded like a bomb. And it was. They were just on the opposite side of the building, and all the damage and whatnot was done on the other side. But that's, I still find that I don't know. I don't think the Prince of Darkness had a hand in that. It is very strange because not long. I don't know the time frame between that one and the invite to the restaurant by Gregory Peck, where that was bombed before they
an
got
hour
there.
Before they were supposed to be
an
home.
Hour before they were supposed to get there, that place is bombed. Strange. But I still think the last one with John Richardson, I still think that one was, I guess, the most compelling if you're trying to make an argument for Satan. I don't know. Speaking of Satan, speaking of inbred hillbilly cannibal freaks of nature, I could only be talking about one movie, and that would be the Wrong Turn movies. I'm a fan of these. And, you know, and at first I wasn't. Yeah, I remember you watching The Wrong Turn, and I'm like, it's probably just one of them, you know, just dumb fucking teenagers' laws. Oh, the same thing over and over. I was already bored with the shit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just nothing new and exciting coming out. And it was years later, you know, I sat down, gave it a watch. I'm like, wow, this is what I've been missing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just kind of, you know, went binge watching. We got like a 3-pack, you know, with the first 3 of them. Got the DVDs and I'm digging them. I'm digging them. And I did get some word from one of the admins over there at Gorehounds, Miss Amy. She is a huge Wrong Turn fan. Loves that series. And I kept seeing a lot of things about a Wrong Turn 7. And people were talking Wrong Turn 7, Wrong Turn 8, Wrong Turn 9. It's like, what is going on here, man? So I messaged something in the in our Gorehounds inner circle chat, and she was like, anything that you see pretty much on YouTube is just all like fan made videos. there is no Wrong Turn 7. Mm. 6 is it right now. I haven't heard any news or whatnot on a new one being made. I've come across these fan made. Some of them are pretty good too, I ain't even gonna lie, because I've watched a few of them thinking this is an actual trailer. So I was kind of impressed, but anyway, there is no Wrong Turn 7, so we have 1 through 6. Let's start with 1. We're gonna give some grades here. We got about 10 minutes left. I think we can do this. Wrong Turn 1. What grade would you give and why?
Wrong Turn 1's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And I'd probably give it a B plus.
And it's your favorite so far out of all of them.
Yeah.
And you give it a B plus, so the other ones don't stand a chance of getting an A, huh?
It's just one of those things that, I don't know, acting can always be a little bit better.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes some of these movies seem B-rated with the acting skills they have going on.
Yeah, but it just makes it, for me, more exciting to root for him to die.
But plus it's, like you said, that's the one thing that kept you from watching them all this time.
Right.
Is the fact of that they have the same premise as most.
And they are kind of in a B-rated kind of, way. But,
they're good, though.
They are good. I dig it.
Gore.
So, yeah.
A little horror.
So B-plus. would it have gotten higher if it would have had better acting? Is that the only bitch you have on it?
Yeah, it's pretty much the only bitch I have about it.
Okay, all right. So you give it a B plus. I'm probably also going to give it a B plus. It was very close to an A. And I don't know why. It is not an A, but a B plus it is. It was really the obviously being the first one in the series, it kind of set the tone for the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And I think with some of them, you don't see a whole lot with sequels and whatnot that they get better. And I think a lot of these movies in the Wrong Turn series got better, which brings us to number 2. Number 2, how'd you like that one? That was the reality show. With old Henry Rollins in it.
I liked it pretty okay. I mean, I didn't like it as much as the first one.
Right.
But I'd say maybe a B minus.
But that's funny. That is so funny because that's exactly what I'm giving it. It was actually pretty close to a C plus for me. I liked it, but what keeps them all from, not hitting the C so far is the gore.
Yeah.
Because these Wrong Turns, I tell you, and I don't know where you've been if you haven't seen any of these, but if you like gore and a lot of, just some really hardcore violent shit, gory shit, Wrong Turn is your movie. And that's the one thing that really keeps it in the B range for me. But I don't know. I like Henry Rollins, and I like some of the things he's done musically, and I just didn't like that role for him. I really didn't. I don't know, I didn't even really like the storyline of the reality show all that much. I wasn't digging it. I'd rather you have the same old storyline of hiking through the fucking woods or something. So you get B minus for the second one. Number three was the prison escape.
I liked that one.
You did like that one? That one, I don't know. I think what rubbed me the wrong way was just the whole prison escape thing. Mm-hmm. All the other ones kind of, started, already in the woods, whether it was the bimbo, actress in the beginning of the second one that, right down the fucking middle, she gets lost or whatever. Mm-hmm. It always kind of had that beginning. So I guess that's kind of what I was expecting.
Right.
And now we're looking at it, it's like, wait a minute, where's the woods? We're in prison here. But it was good. Again, it's all about the gore. So you dug that one. You really like that one. What do you give that one?
Yeah, I may give that one a B minus.
Oh, you're gonna give that one a B minus
yeah.
too? Okay. I'm not gonna go that bad on it. But I am only gonna give it a B. I'm only gonna give it a B. So part three gets a B. Part four. Now I gotta try and remember that one.
It's where they go to the sanitarium.
Okay. I'm still trying to remember.
And the hillbillies are in the sanitarium and start killing them.
Okay, all right. I'm getting flashbacks of that one.
Not my favorite one.
Not your favorite one. Mm-mm. Is this the one that's going to get the lowest?
Probably.
What is it getting?
I'd say probably about a C minus.
C minus. Wow. I don't even remember this one a whole lot. But I'm probably going to... I do remember parts of it. I'm still going to have to just go with a flat B. Because the gore is just... As I'm telling you, the gore keeps these movies afloat mm-hmm. in the B section
gore
for me.
Just, I don't know. I just thought it was.
Well, you can have plot. A lot. You can have a lot of gore and a shitty storyline, a shitty plot, and it ruined the entire movie. So it makes sense. Number five, which was Bloodlines, I believe. Wasn't that the name of it?
Mm-hmm.
Bloodlines. We just watched that one. I watched it yesterday, and I think that you watched it again today. What'd you think of that one?
I thought it was okay. They were kind of stretching, but...
I actually like that one. That one ranks right up there for me with the first one.
I'd say I'd probably give it about a B.
I'm going B plus with this one, just like I did with the first one. I really think it ranks right up there. I don't know. It was almost like they didn't lose anything from the first one. You
right.
know, I don't think it was stretching too much, but I do dig that one quite a bit. And then, of course, six, which I watched actually, I think, a couple weeks ago. That, again, starts out with bikers, riding their mountain bikes through the woods and things go horribly wrong for them. And that's how I think they should be started out. I don't think they should ever change that. What do you give six?
I give it a B.
A B?
Yeah.
I'm going to go a flat B as well. So, I mean, all in all, except for four, which you dislike the most, everything got pretty much in that B range.
Mm-hmm.
C minus for four. Not a fan of four. Jody is not. All right, well, we've come to the end of this rambling. We talked a sick motherfucker tonight. Andre Chikatali. Russian serial killer. Check him out. I'll get links in the description here. For this here podcast, you can listen to this one. You can listen to all the other ones over there at nightthelivingdreads.com. No A in Dreads. And don't forget to visit our dear, dear friends, our horror family, the best damn horror group on Facebook, Gorehounds of Horror, and a newly new horror group out there, After Dark. Check them out as well. And hey, you know, we're over there if you care. Night of the Living Dreads over there on Facebook. Thank you, Jody, for sitting in for Malice.
You're welcome.
And it was fun. A lot of sick, disgusting shit we talked about. Some good movies, some horror movie conspiracy theories. And it was fun. Hey, I have no idea what we're talking about next week. Actually, I do, but I'm just not saying anything. I've been talking to Malice earlier. We have ideas. So it sounds like he'll be back. He will be well and ready to go. So we hope to talk to you next week. Have a good evening.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.